My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Tonight it's just me and Ronald, and trying to capture some of that disturbing the peace magic, I thought, let's do another shitty movie. So I came to Ronald with some choices, and he'd recently watched Ruthless, and he's like, let's talk about fucking Ruthless. So we're talking about 2023's Ruthless, directed by Art Camacho and starring Dylan McDermott, which is, or is it
Dermot Mulroney?
Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of hard, dude. I always mix those guys up.
Yeah. That is the joke. Anyways. And, let's go around and would you recommend this? Ronald, would you recommend this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think if you like the same stuff I do, I think you'll like this movie. I had a great time with it. It's very stupid and like pretty bad, but I also think that it's bad in a really fun way. If you're up for that, then I think this is a great time, especially just watching at home. Like I got to watch this movie for free. I found it very engaging. At the same time, it was like hilariously stupid. That being said, like this is not a good movie, so don't go in expecting that. And like it's written badly, it's acted pretty poorly from everyone but Dermot Mulroney, who gives like an okay performance.
Even he chunks a line every now and then, and yeah. They just left it in, though. Art Camacho does not appear to have believed in second takes.
Yeah, what else has he directed?
I don't fucking know. Probably bad things, though. Let's have a look.
Yeah I'm looking at it right now. He directed Ruthless, obviously.
He's got a lot of pictures of himself in cool jackets and sunglasses.
I'm not sure how many of these he actually directed, too, because I'm just looking at Google.
Let's see. Well, he directed, he appears to have done a lot of fight choreography, which kind of makes you wonder why the fuck the fight choreography here isn't good. For a director, yeah. He's done 26, looks like some music videos and shorts and a lot of direct-to-DVD stuff. He directed Little Bigfoot. Does that entice you at all? And Little Bigfoot 2, The Journey Home.
Okay, but this might turn you around on him, because he directed 6 episodes of a show called The Camacho Experiment.
It would be very funny if he hadn't directed that. Yeah.
I guess he's more like a stuntman, which is kind of interesting. I don't think that this is the worst movie I've seen that's like shot. I would watch this over Disturbing the Peace like 10 times. So I thought it was an okay time for given how little, like there's little things in this that you'll notice that are like just kind of terrible. I do think that like generally it's shot okay though. And the pacing is good enough. So maybe he gets that from his stunt background. He like knows what's interesting to watch, but they don't like, doesn't seem like they did like a lot of line reads. They chunk them a lot in this, especially everyone but the main guy. He even does. I don't feel like they, you know, I don't know if they just didn't give him enough takes or I don't know. What do you think about this movie, Lawrence? I'm interested to hear your take.
So I recommended this previously, and I basically stand by what I said, which is that it's a hoot and a half, but you kind of have to wade through a distasteful subject matter. And I kind of wish that a version of this movie existed that wasn't about human trafficking and like sexual slavery, because that I think kind of stops it from being like a god tier, just laugh at it movie, you know?
Yeah. That's like the thing I didn't even mention is that this movie is very distasteful.
Yeah. I mean, and it doesn't even like it doesn't revel in the distastefulness at all, but that almost makes it worse. Cause it's like not really engaging it and just using like, you know, sex slavery as like sort of like the generic, bad thing that the guys are doing in a way where you'd have to change a bit, but it wouldn't take that much work to make this about drugs instead, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of wish we had the movie, the version of this that was about drugs.
Yeah. Or just something like that isn't like so horrible that it would like fuck up somebody who's experienced it, you know?
Yeah.
But without adding any kind of insight or commentary onto the,
yeah.
I, you know, maybe it's better that they didn't try to do anything like that though, because there's no way it would have pulled anything correct off here.
Yeah. It's it's just, that leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But if you can live through that, it is an extremely fun and funny movie. So if you've got the kind of irony, poison, broken brain where you can like put up a little bit with it being about that, you'll have a good time. If not, there's plenty of other like direct to DVD shit out there that'll get you, you know, about where this gets you to, you know.
Yeah, this certainly isn't a unique film and isn't something that you need to like rush out the door to go watch right now.
But on the other hand, this is pretty close to like what you hope you're going to get with a like with when you put on one of these direct to DVD schlock movies, you know.
Yeah, this is what I wanted when we saw Disturbing the Peace.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, so we were going to just go long with the summary. I figured I'd pick it up, but then there were parts of this where I got bored. So you can like help me with those. And
sounds good.
Okay, so first off, we start with six, count them, six production company logos. Which a great mark of quality. Everything from Saban, the people who invented the Power Rangers, all the way up through just, I think it was a picture of a little girl standing by a lake. And then we cut to like a Dermot Mulroney sitting in a like old movie theater watching some movie I didn't recognize but was embarrassed by. And he's like eating his popcorn. And then down in front, there's like this boy and a girl. And it seems like they're on a good date. They're throwing popcorn and being flirty. But then the boy whispers something to the girl and she says something about just friends. And the boy's like, oh, I'm getting friend zoned. Fuck no. And starts trying to do sex crimes to her of just like really like getting handsy with her. Even after she said no repeatedly and pushed him away until eventually she walks off. Dermot Mulroney defuses the situation a little bit by throwing some popcorn at the guy. And that gives the girl an opening to escape. And then the guy decides to wait in the parking lot until Dermot Mulroney gets out. And, he got a phone call while he was in the movie, right? Yeah.
Oh, right. But he ignored it.
Because he was trying to be a good moviegoer. Yeah. Anyways, you were saying?
Doesn't this whole sequence kind of feel like one of those, like, things you think about in the shower? Like, how it could have gone?
Yeah, exactly. And then he pulls a knife, and then I effortlessly defeat him.
For some reason, he hangs around to talk to me after I completed watching the movie, because why would I leave in the middle? And he pulls a knife on me because I said, hey, stop bothering that girl in the middle of a movie.
Yeah, and then I dodged several of his strikes. This guy, for some reason, is willing to go to prison for 20 years for stabbing an old guy who stopped it.
Presumably he's in high school.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it seemed like.
And it's sort of like, why isn't he... I mean, not to be horrible, but shouldn't he be more angry at the girl in this situation than the old man?
Yeah.
If he's going to try to do a crime to someone... But I guess I'm glad he does it. So Dermot Mulroney dodges all of his... He pulls out a knife. Dermot Mulroney dodges all of his knife blows. And in what weirdly becomes like a theme of the movie, he breaks the guy's arm. And then he's like, you might want to take 6 months before you jerk off, unless you're a lefty. Which, very strange. Why is it like optional to take the 6 months off?
Yeah. You know, he had to have a cool one-liner, but they didn't actually know how to write in this movie. So they just... have him say really bizarre things sometimes.
Yeah, and then the guy, for some reason, after being effortlessly defeated and disarmed and having his arm broken, is like, no, I'm really going to try to beat this old man up. So he goes at him again, and Dermot Mulroney breaks his other arm, and then he says, no, you can't jerk off at all. Hope you have friends. And then at this point, for some reason, Dermot Mulroney asks him if he has health insurance and knows where the nearest ER is. It's like, what if he doesn't have health insurance, Dermot Mulroney? What then?
Yeah. Are you going to fix it yourself?
Or are you going to somehow put him on your health insurance to cover it? Or if you, I mean, the joke of doing that, which I've seen in a couple of action movies, is you have the person, the badass guy. He's so confident that he starts asking the people those kind of questions before the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing it after.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense because it's like, well, I guess if you say no, I'm just going to feel like shit. But, you know. Yeah. I can't do anything about it now.
But anyways, and then it turns out the creepy dude's name is Ronald, and the coach warns him off and says he needs to start taking no for an answer, which this has always bugged me in these movies where like they'll beat the shit out of someone for doing something bad, and then they'll say, and if you ever do that again, I'll come and find you. And this is supposed to have fixed the problem, but That I think that might stop the person from doing the bad thing for like a couple of months, but eventually they're going to like realize that that person probably isn't actually going to come and find them, and then you're back to square one, except that the person's probably angrier at the world because something bad that they perceive as bad and unjust happened to them.
No, look, you got to understand, Lawrence, in the logic of these movies, if you beat the shit out of somebody, then they do whatever you think is right. Might makes right. But only if you're like the good guy. If you're the bad guy and you do that to somebody, then you know, you'll get killed by the good guy eventually.
So then he goes home. He sees that the missed call was from his daughter who didn't leave a voicemail. So he calls her back and we get some exposition where it turns out he's a former Olympian and he's a high school coach. And one of the boys he's coaching is also going to the Olympics, which cool, I guess. Yeah, I do think
that means he's really good at fighting.
Yeah, that this will be the only explanation we ever get for why he's like a super assassin guy later. Although having rewatched the movie, he's not actually, I mean, he's good at fighting in like a realistic way he could be, but it's more that just everyone else he fights is not that good at fighting. And that's why he wins in a way that I guess is sort of realistic, but also isn't that entertaining to watch when we do get to the fight scenes.
Yeah. There's maybe one fight scene where the guy like kind of puts up a fight. And besides that, he just kind of really hurts people while they fecklessly watch.
Yeah, his specialty is breaking arms and then breaking what I call the arms of the hand, which are fingers. He doesn't really seem to have any other sort of things in his bow. But anyways. Yeah.
You know, he's a wrestler, but I don't think he actually does any wrestling moves.
Yeah, maybe in the very last fight, possibly. But yeah, it's mostly kind of just grappling and then breaking. I guess grappling and then putting people in arm bars and breaking their arms is a kind of wrestling, but it's also not the kind you learn in professional wrestling because you're not allowed to do that kind of submission in pro wrestling, I don't think.
Yeah, I guess I don't know enough about it.
I think that that's more of an MMA thing, honestly.
Yeah, because like mostly wrestling is like getting the other person to the ground.
Yeah, and then pinning them so they can't escape. I guess a submission might exist in some form in wrestling, but it's definitely not like the main thing you practice.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. Okay.
Yeah, anyways, so he gets home and he leaves this exposition-y message. Also, it's super weird to take popcorn out of a movie to me. Like, one, it's weird that he didn't just, like, finish his popcorn. But two, just taking that shit home, like, theater popcorn, the colder it gets, the more inedible it is. And
you know what? I actually like taking popcorn out, but the thing is, it's a practical problem. They put it in those giant tubs, not easy to take with you in your car, especially when you're alone.
Yeah, well, fortunately for him, the knife guy solved this problem by just making him spill it while he was slashing at him with the knife.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, he would have spilled it anyways, just in his car.
Yeah, do you have, like, a legit top you put on your popcorn tubs, like, that you got off the internet or something?
No.
Yeah. You just spill it?
I don't usually take it home because I usually eat it all. But I would take it home, and I have before. It's just not very convenient.
Yeah. So anyways, then he gets a call back from his daughter, and, he thinks it's his daughter.
He thinks it's his daughter, yeah.
But it turns out that it's a detective who found his daughter's phone and is for some reason using it to notify next of kin instead of, like, a regular phone. Seems very distasteful, but anyways, and it turns out his daughter was found at a crime scene and she got assaulted and, like, you know, beat up real bad, and she's barely clinging to life. They have a suspect who's an incredibly smug guy. Dylan Dermot Mulroney goes to the hospital and watches his daughter dies in front of him.
Pretty fucked up, but like, yeah, so stupid.
It doesn't belong in this movie at all. But yeah, and he doesn't really have quite the acting chops to make this work. So it doesn't really, it's not as upsetting as it probably should be.
Yeah, that's where I want to, like, talk about the comparison to Disturbing the Peace. Dermot Mulroney definitely gives the best performance here out of everyone. And, like, probably by a pretty good amount. But I don't think the gap is nearly as big as it was in Disturbing the Peace between Guy Pearce and everyone else. It was, like, Guy Pearce had a pretty much flawless performance in that movie. There was a couple of, like, weird...
I love that by flawless, you don't mean like Academy Award. You mean he delivered all of his lines successfully.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I would say that everything that he said was pretty believable despite a really terrible script. like, I keep thinking, like, oh man, I kept thinking when I was watching that movie, like, I don't know if this is just like such a horrible script that nobody could do this, because every other actor in the movie is so awful. But then as soon as he reads his lines, I'm like, no, that's, you know,
yeah,
I buy that.
Here, yeah. I don't think Dermot Mulroney is doing as good as Guy Pearce did there. But on the other hand, there's not as big of a delta between them. So it's not like, you know, a giant striding amongst, you know, maggots or whatever.
Yeah. And also, Dermot Mulroney gets to act on screen with other people, whereas Guy Pearce, for some reason, was put alone in every scene in Disturbing the Peace. So, like, I feel like that kind of helps him a lot because he's able to, like, kind of use his chops to help the other actors play off of him.
Yeah. So the acting here probably better on the average, but also the highs are lower. It also has the advantage of also the lows are much higher because there's no one here there's like one person here who I'm like, that person is not an actor. I don't know why they're in this movie.
Which one is that?
The mother. And also the father, the step abusive boyfriend, stepfather guy.
That guy's like maybe the funniest guy though.
Yeah, I mean, he's acting, but he's acting so hard for results.
Really bad. But you know what? I'd love to see it. Every time he's on screen, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good scene.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah. Oh, also, did I mention that the guy, the creepy boyfriend's name was Ronald?
Is he the boyfriend or was he the guy at the theater?
The guy at the theater, his name was
Ronald. I think you did mention that one, yeah.
Good, good.
I think the other guy's name, what, Dylan?
I don't fucking remember. Anyways, although they do say it a bunch. Maybe? Yeah.
I think that's what the cop says.
He says that he was her boyfriend. He was her boyfriend. He took her out for a date and I guess raped and murdered her. Well, I guess raped and fatally injured her and then she died later. Then they go in, and in this sort of movie, normally the guy would get off and it would be
for some reason.
Yeah. It would be like, oh my God, the justice system has failed you. But the weird thing is that the justice system fails a lot of people in this movie, but it's mostly the criminals who not the bad guys or not. Dylan McDermott, whatever.
It fails them. It fails to protect them from Dermot Mulroney's wrath.
Yes, in a way that it really seems like it should, because the detectives always know exactly what he's going to do, and always know where he is, and always refuse to do anything to stop him.
They just kind of say, like, please don't.
And then he's like,
no. And then he's like, I'm going to do it anyways.
Yeah, and he doesn't even lie about what he's doing, which is very funny. They're like, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I'm going there and I'm going to go on a killing spree. And they're like, please don't.
You don't have authorization to do that. And he's like, well, I'm going to do it. And then they're like, well, okay, I guess he's going to do it.
And then after he hangs up, the detective will go, this fucking guy. But as if he's annoyed, he's an annoying scamp and not a guy who's going on a multi-state torture and murder spree.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways.
The guy... Yeah, you think he's going to get off, but he actually just immediately gets arrested and goes to jail. And at his trial, when he's found guilty, he looks incredibly smug. Yeah. Which just, I don't understand the reaction here. I talked about this with Lawrence for a while, but it's like, usually they're smug because they got off.
Yeah, like, this guy gets sentenced to life in prison and smirks through the whole fucking thing.
And he only murdered one person. That's not even really aspirational for a murderer.
Yeah. And he's not like, I mean, if he had like delivered a really like psycho monologue or thought he proved some weird point or something, but later we find out he's taken the fall for someone. So he's just so it's like, why is he so smug about this? And he's like, I got paid off. And it's like, okay, that'll help you a lot in fucking prison, dude.
Yeah. Right. Like you're going to get extra Cheetos now. I don't know.
Yeah. You're going to have protection. So the worst things that can happen to you in prison won't happen to you, but you're still going to be in prison. Great work. Real deals, man. Just So Dermot Mulroney decides to really throw himself into being a high school coach.
So now there's like a time skip, right?
Yeah, a bit forward. Years. Oh, actually, I forgot. There's a scene where he gets very, very drunk and stares at a gun. And then the police officer calls him and just says, hey, maybe you should get some therapy or something. And Dermot Mulroney just grunts at him.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that fixed him.
Yeah.
He didn't shoot himself.
Oh, that's what he was thinking? I thought he was going to go on a killing spree because... I mean, it turns out he really likes...
I mean, who knows? I guess the movie later proves that he was going to go on a killing spree. But at the time when I watched it, I thought he was thinking about suicide.
That makes a lot more sense, honestly. Maybe because he's like, oh, well, we got justice, didn't we? And that makes it all better, really bitter-like. And yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we cut forward and he's a wrestling coach at a high school, which apparently he has currently, well, recently coached a guy so good that guy got to go to the Olympics and he's still stuck coaching high school. And I know like Olympics are like amateur and all that shit, but it still seems like he should have a better job.
Yeah. I don't know if the implication here is that he kind of gave up on trying or if like,
Maybe the him becoming a high school coach is like him falling down in the world, I guess.
Yeah. Which like seems kind of insulting, but
also if that was the case, they really needed to establish more of like he was doing good a little bit. This movie, we talked about this in the chat, but it, normally in this kind of movie, the way it works is you get a little bit of the guy being normal and happy, then the horrible thing happens to him, then he goes on the killing spree, and over the course of the killing spree, you find out what a badass he is, and like there's always more and more revelations about how like super cool he is, and like the cops are either on his side or can't touch him, blah, 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 right? That's your John Wick, that's your Taken. And this, they show him to be a badass in the first scene, and he stays a badass throughout, and there's never any hidden depth to his badassitude revealed, which is kind of a serious flaw in this kind of deal.
Yeah, because there's never a moment where you're like, oh shit,
I can't believe he did that. He's always kind of just doing about the same stuff,
right? Because like he does it right away without really that much provocation.
Yeah. And also, and I can't stress, his main move is breaking people's arms, and he does that within the first like 5 minutes of the movie. So
yeah pretty weird.
Yeah, but anyways, so he's got a girl that is like trying to become a wrestler, and she has to spar like with hot like people who are better at wrestling so she can get better. And he's like, "No, you're terrible at wrestling. Why don't you go join the track team?"
And well, because she's on the girls' wrestling team, I think.
Maybe.
And she asks if she can wrestle the boys because they're better.
Yeah.
And then he says, "No, you're not even good against the girls. Why would I let you do that?" And she calls him for that a sexist piece of shit,
let me hit you with the line first. So she goes, "Do you have to be sexist pig like all of them? At least look down at me when you're taking a she." And then she doesn't say "be a sexist pig." She says "be sexist pig." And then she forgets to say the terminal T in shit. And also she says, don't everyone looks down at their shit, right? And it's like, I mean, no, I kind of try not to look at it, honestly. I just flush and move on with my day.
She says, "At least look down at me while you're taking a shit, because everyone looks down when they take a shit. And if you're going to shit on me, you should look down," or something like that. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, not only is that just like a weird thing to say in general, but like, it's not even true. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, keep in mind, Ronald is the podcast resident poop enthusiast and expert, so he fucking knows.
Yeah, they should have gone to me to fact check this line, because it is just out of this world. No, and like, okay, Lawrence was doing an accent there, and like, the girl does have a light accent, but don't get it wrong, she's not supposed to have broken English, she just chunked the line.
And then they're like, second take, no thanks, move on.
And that happens a few times throughout. Like, she has maybe a little bit of an accent, but it's really not that pronounced, I would say.
Yeah. One weird thing about this movie is that a lot of the actors are Hispanic, but it's actually not that racist, which I was kind of surprised by the first time.
Yeah, weirdly it's not. But also, like, like some things that you might think like, oh, okay, they have broken English because like English isn't their first language in the movie or something. That's not true. As far as I can tell in this movie, Katya seems, for the most part, most of her lines are like, you know, perfect English with not really any problems. And then clearly she's just chunking the line sometimes and runs it over, and they just don't care enough to, the actor chunks the line, not the character. So
yeah. And
that's
anyways,
how you can tell it's good.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on. Oh, and while she's storming out, she throws her wrestling gear at a picture on his desk, which is, of course, of his dead daughter, which seems, I don't think, she doesn't know it's his dead daughter, but that's still like such a weird, mean detail, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very strange. And it's like, I couldn't tell if she like did that on purpose or if she just like threw the thing.
Yeah, and, so, and it's a cutaway shot of it specifically happening, so you think it's going to be some kind of symbolism or something, and it's really not.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. And she later apologizes, so I was like, what was the point of that shot?
Yeah. So anyways, we cut to her house where her father, her, I guess, whatever you call your mother's boyfriend, I guess it's just mother's boyfriend. I'm probably going to slip and call him stepfather a lot. So she comes
close home, enough because they're living together.
Yeah. She comes home. He immediately gets on her ass for not bringing him food, even though, I mean, it doesn't seem like that was really her responsibility.
He seems to just be sitting at home alone doing nothing.
Yeah. She goes into her room. He comes in and starts saying that she should be more grateful. And you think it's going to go into like, you know, that direction, but then it doesn't. And instead they exchange words and then he slaps her and then she punches him in the face. So he slaps her again. And then the mother comes in. They both tell weird lies about what happened in a way that I thought was strangely realistic, but not in a way that really helps the movie's end. Because he claims that she sucker punched him and she claimed that he hit her first twice, neither of which is correct.
Yeah, that is I mean, like, why would she lie?
But yeah, well, I guess she's lying to try to make herself look better in the way you always do in the, you often do in this kind of situation. But it's just
especially with your kid. Yeah,
yeah, but it's just such a weird touch of realism in a movie that otherwise has none. That I'm like, why is this there? It's like a much more thoughtful and good and serious script wandered through the movie for a second, and then it's like, wait, I don't belong here, and ran away.
It only has, like, that one line.
Yeah.
Those two lines.
Yeah, and this stepfather is kind of the best character in the movie.
Oh,
honestly,
he's incredible.
Because for some reason, every single line, it's like he flipped a coin and is like, am I Hispanic or am I Southern? Which should it be this time?
Yeah, and it's not like a weird hybrid mix of the accents. It's just like every once in a while, he'll just dip into like really Southern.
Yeah.
And then a lot of other times he'll be like pretty, he'll have like kind of more of a Hispanic accent. And then sometimes he'll just have none.
Yeah. But and then later on in the movie, he'll switch from a coin to a die and occasionally just start shrieking his lines.
Yeah. It's maybe a little bit more appropriate at times though. So
yeah,
we accept it. But this guy's hilarious. He's a terrible actor. Very fun to watch though.
And for some reason, they actually give him some legitimately funny lines that he sells, but I'm not sure if they're intended to be funny or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And, like, this is, like, maybe one of the main characters, though, one of the only people who has, like, a decent amount of lines besides Dermot Mulroney and the girl, Katya.
Yeah. And the detective who is fucking terrible.
Yeah, the detective who's also terrible. And also, he doesn't try. Like, at least this guy is trying stuff. He's not doing a very good job at it.
But I don't think I've ever seen a guy try harder at a performance to less effect than this man. I almost feel sorry for him, honestly.
Well, he ended up looking the best out of this movie besides Dermot Mulroney. So.
Yeah, if I was going to hire anyone out of this movie, it would be Dermot Mulroney, Jeff Fahey, or this guy.
Yep.
And I was probably going to hire Dermot Mulroney or Jeff Fahey anyways. This guy's the only one who improved his stock. Because I'm like, what would he do if I made a game? If I'm like, hey, you're Russian now. What accent would come out of him then, you know?
Right.
Anyways. Also in this fight, it never looks like they're hitting each other, which makes it a lot more fun to laugh at. If it seemed like the hits were realistic, then on some level it would be a man like beating the shit out of his daughter, essentially, and that's not fun, but they're just like doing those big old like I'm turning my body halfway around style reactions to the hits, and it's very funny.
Yep Yeah, and which is like more baffling that the director of this is a stuntman, because it's like feels like you could have done a better job here. This is like the thing that you are good at.
Yeah, it seems like there should be at least one elaborate fight sequence, because I mean there's a pretty good chance that the way this guy got this job was essentially, hey, you know how John Wick, like, they got a stuntman to direct it and it was incredible? I'm a stuntman. Imagine what I could do. Give me Jeff Faye or give me fucking Dermot Mulroney. He's, you know, he's not quite Keanu, but he's got a kind of weathered gravitas to him. I bet I could make some shit happen. And then he didn't. Art Camacho, but this fucking sucks as a movie. I mean, it's hilarious and awesome, but it also sucks.
You know, it's better that he tried to make it not a joke, though.
Yeah, definitely. If this had been sort of in on the joke of itself, it
like if it
sucked.
Was like winking at the audience about like this is so stupid, I would have been like, God, this is fucking painful to watch.
Yeah,
but it was earnestly trying, and that makes it so much better, I think.
Yeah. So, anyways, then. She comes home from school the next day. Or no, I'm trying to think. Oh, right. She leaves.
So she goes to school the next day.
No, no. She leaves and the coach right. finds her. But before she leaves, they're shouting some more. And she shouts, he's like, how dare you be so rude to me in my own house? I pay for your rent. And then she goes, this isn't a house. We don't even own milk. It's like, what's that mean?
All houses have milk, Lauren said. Haven't you ever seen the 1950s where they have like milkmen or whatever?
Yeah, but why also own milk is such a, like, it's a fucking investment.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like, there was like, yeah, she's just like such a weird character and has like, you know, she's like kind of supposed to be like a little bit rebellious, but it's also like, we don't need to see that side of her. We saw what happened, you know, as the audience. We saw what happened.
Yeah.
This isn't really a rebellion. This is like she's trying to get to a safe spot.
Yeah. So anyways, we cut to Dermot Mulroney, who is paying a guy to beat him up at a gym. And the guy's like, but the thing is, you'd expect them both to be super fighters, and they're not. The guy is better at fighting than Dermot Mulroney, and he's just kind of beating him up, and Dermot Mulroney's getting some punches off. And it looks like probably the pretty realistic kind of boxing you'd see if you just went down to your local gym during, like, whatever the fuck free training they have where you can set up sparring matches. Assuming that is actually a thing that exists and not just in movies, you know? It's not like they're doing fucking super, like, Krav Maga capoeira shit. And, apparently Dermot Mulroney has the guy do this to him every night, and the guy's like, taking pain doesn't make you strong, it makes you stupid. And I don't know. So Dermot Mulroney heads home. Is this where he finds out that the guy has a store in his trunk, or is that later? I don't. Let's just say it now. I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't exactly remember the sequence, but I think it was around now. I think it was actually maybe a different time, but like it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So anyways, this guy, in addition to getting paid every night to beat the shit out of Dermot Mulroney, also has a store in the back of his car, where he explains that the guys at the gym are a lot of security guards, so he sells them security supplies, by which he means zip ties, apparently loose shotgun shells, and what appear to be tasers.
Yeah. And he just stands out in the parking lot all night.
Yeah, for some reason. I guess people call him and they're like, hey, I want some, you know, give me 50 zip ties. Let's meet at the gym. I'll give you, I don't know, $5.
Well, okay, that's what I thought. But then later, Dermot Mulroney goes to the parking lot, and the guy's like, "What are you doing here?" And okay. And he says, "I need to buy something from you." And it's like, so you're just sitting out here like all night, just waiting for anyone to roll up and ask for security supplies
or to pay you to beat them up.
Yeah, well, one or the other. Yeah,
yeah. It's the gym is rich with economic opportunity for the wily entrepreneur. Yeah.
And I expected, you know, when he said, because when you first see, he's like, oh, yeah, I have security equipment. So I was thinking, you know, cameras, like things for like PIs, maybe, or for bodyguards. So maybe guns or like armor, things like that. But it's like the stuff that you wouldn't even need to go to a specialty shop
for. Yeah. He explains that it's faster than Amazon if you don't pay sales tax, which makes me wonder how the fuck he's making money. But anyways, unless he's, I don't know, just jacking it up a lot. But even then, even if you'd like double like the price of a zip tie, you're still talking like 10 cents profit.
Yeah. And it's like, so do you buy it without tax or what do you mean by they don't pay tax?
Yeah. 100% what this was initially was this guy was selling guns out of his trunk, and then they couldn't get the money to have gun fights.
Then he ran out of guns.
But for some reason they didn't want to cut this bit of business. So
yeah, that might be right. Yeah.
There's like, I think legitimately there is one gunshot in this entire movie, and it is rendered entirely with a sound effect. So yeah.
But well, he has a gun later,
but he does not,
but
use
he doesn't
it
ever fire it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, so he's, Dermot Mulroney is heading home from getting beaten up, and he sees the girl.
At like a bus stop.
Yeah. They have a little bit of nominally amusing banter about like how she's got a big bag, so she says it's a body, and you know, she killed her stepdad and all that, and he's like, ah, typical. And it is kind of astonishing to watch Dermot Mulroney doing his best to, the way you sell this kind of banter on the receiving end is you're just deadpan, right? But the girl doesn't have like the chops to pull it off. So it's kind of like watching her like batter against a wall acting wise. Yeah.
Yeah, it is very funny.
Yeah, but anyway, so he takes her to a diner and gives her some advice, which is basically you should be nicer to your stepdad because then he'll be more likely to listen to you. And it's like, he's fucking hitting her. This is beyond like, that.
He has bruises on her face and you know it.
Yeah. This and he's like, well, I can take you to the police or I can take you home. And for some reason, she decides to go home, which I don't blame her for because people who are abused often make decisions that on the outside appear irrational. But I do blame the hell out of him for making a 17-year-old, like even giving her the option of going back to her abusive stepfather. Yeah. And then he goes the next day, he goes and talks to the principal who for some reason is dead set against, reporting this, despite the massive legal liability this opens him up to. Like, legitimately, he is committing a crime in this scene by failing to mandatory report.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, if you file a report, then you're going to be named in the court case and your address will be listed. And it's like, that doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the way this scene would work in a normal movie is, oh, that guy's like really rich and powerful and gives a lot of money to the school and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But no, it's just sort of like, this guy's a dirtbag, white trash piece of shit, but for some reason, yeah. I don't want the hassle.
And I don't even know who he is, really, because I don't think they have any idea who the guy is. They just think that it's too much of a pain in the ass to file a report.
Yeah, and Dermot Mulroney is disgusted by this, and the way he manifests this disgust is by giving the guy who has a PhD shit for not being an MD, which is such a weird hack stand-up premise. And it's so odd that that is how he's expressing his disgust at the man looking the other way while this girl is beaten.
Yeah, it's like, he's doing something really terrible, and like, for some reason, and you're using that as an opportunity to like grandstand about PhDs and MDs both being called doctors. Like, it doesn't really apply here, bud.
Yeah, he says, I wouldn't let you even take my temperature. And it's like, yeah, he's a doctor of English literature. He wouldn't try. That's not a burn.
Well, it's like, this is another problem with this movie, is that, like, clearly the guys, whoever wrote this, which I don't know if it was Art Camacho or not, whoever wrote this does not know how to write, like, dialogue. So, like, he tries to insert, like, you know, berms or, you know, comedy, but none of it really lands. So it's just like, what? Was that supposed to be funny?
Like, it also really hurts the tone of the movie. Because again, this is a movie where it has like a girl getting slapped full on in the face twice on screen in a way that, I mean, he couldn't know when he was writing the script that that wasn't going to land. And then ultimately turns out to be like about industrialized sex slavery. As like, that doesn't seem like something that should really have jokes in it, honestly.
Yeah, right. Especially when they're literally talking about it.
Yeah, or if it has jokes, they should be of a very dark kind that mostly, where the punchline is mostly someone dying. It shouldn't be like a guy getting shit for not doing a PhD, for not having an MD. Oh, and also during the scene, Dermot Mulroney says, "So because you're a chicken shit, she has to duck jabs at home," which is a line that is trying too hard to me.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also like, he says, go ahead and file it, but then come back to me in 3 months and tell me if it was worth it. And for some reason, Don Moroni, you know, he calls him a chicken shit, but then he doesn't end up filing anything.
Yeah.
So it's like, well,
instead, he just goes and breaks some arms.
Yeah. He just goes and breaks the guy's arms. Because, like, she comes back in the next day and she has more bruises.
And he's so, like, what happened? As if he can't put the fucking pieces together. Yeah. And she's like, what do you think? With pretty good disgust. And it's like, yeah, you earned that, dude. What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. So then he decides to go over to her house, right?
Yeah. This scene is kind of incredible in a way because, first off, the girl's terrible. The stepfather's terrible. Dermot Mulroney shows up and he's like, hey, do you want anything to eat? And the guy's like, yeah, I'd like some chicken wings or something like that.
Yeah. Chicken wings.
Yeah. And so he gives the girl $100 and tells her, go get chicken wings, get anything else you want, and also gets a little thing of ibuprofen or aspirin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know where it's going, but they seem to not put the pieces together, and the guy looks really smug for some reason.
He's like, oh shit, this dude showed up and he's buying me chicken wings and getting rid of my piece of shit daughter for a little bit. That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what he thinks is going to happen here. Like, okay, put yourself in this guy's shoes. Some guy shows up at your door and says, like, sends the girl away to go buy food, what do you think he's going to say that would be positive for you?
I honestly would think that the guy was trying to have sex with me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the most positive outcome in this scenario. I would think, oh, this guy's about to, like, fucking either
try to... This guy's about to blackmail me or something.
Do something bad. But if I wasn't thinking that, I honestly don't know what I would be thinking.
The most positive thing is... Dermot Mulroney's about to make a pass at you, which is great. But
and that's not really something I'd be smug about, probably.
Yeah, but basically everything else seems terrible, honestly. Yeah. That's like the good thing, and then everything else is bad to catastrophic.
Bad to basically death. And he does not seem to even consider those possibilities. So.
He's just like, yeah, the universe owes me chicken wings. This is awesome. And it chose Dermot Mulroney to deliver this bounty. But anyways, so he's like, okay, I just want to talk to you man to man. Stop hitting that kid. And then the guy's like, no. And then he's like, okay, well, if you want, I will not break your right arm if you promise not to hit him. He's like, wait, what about my left? And Dermot Mulroney's like, well, I've already decided to break that. And then the guy protests, and Dermot Mulroney just breaks all his arms. Well, I guess he breaks one of them.
Yeah, he breaks one of his arms, and the guy starts screaming pretty bad. They're getting a little bit of a scrap, but not really much of one.
Yeah, Dermot Mulroney is so effortlessly dominating this guy at every turn that it doesn't even count as a fight. It's more an extended act of bullying. Yeah. Albeit justified bully.
Yeah, I mean, the guy deserved it. But, you know, like, definitely this is not a legal thing. And so, like, he breaks the guy's arms. The girl comes back.
The girl is weirdly pretty excited and thinks this is hilarious, which is a very realistic response, but again, a strange one in this movie. You know?
Yeah. And, like... You know, he does the thing where he's like, oh, the ibuprofen's for him, which, like, obviously.
Yeah, there's this really funny thing where she just kind of, she tosses the ibuprofen at him the way you might toss, like, food to a dangerous caged animal. And then he looks at it for a sec, and then he goes, I can't open that shit!
Yeah, and he says, like, call the hospital. And she, like, hands him the chicken wings or whatever.
Do they actually sell chicken wings at 7-Eleven?
I think so, yeah.
Are they any good?
They sell a lot of food at 7-Eleven. I don't know. I've never had one.
The hot food at 7-Eleven, though, to me, that's some real dire fucking straits, you know?
Yeah, but, okay, to be fair, I think the hot food from 7-Eleven is a little bit of a cut above, like, the hot food at most gas stations.
Okay, I'll give you, I guess, by the time I could make that kind of decision for myself. I was, like, vegan, so I haven't experienced a lot of it. But you got to admit, gas station hot food has a certain reputation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 7-Eleven, okay, so this is a tangent, but since I moved out to the East Coast, I have come to realize that 7-Eleven is kind of a different, like, yes, it's attached to a lot of gas stations, but there's also a lot of 7-Elevens out here that aren't part of gas stations. They're just standalone shops. And I guess they're popular enough out here that that's like a thing, which I find kind of strange because it's like, to me, in New Mexico, 7-Eleven is a gas station, right? But like around here, most of them are not gas stations. So
I can think of like one. I think it's like a Circle K. It's down by Golden Pride. That's not a gas station, weirdly. Oh. I think it's mostly a liquor store, if I'm being honest.
Interesting. Yeah. So anyways... Right. The food there is probably a little bit better than what you might think of a gas station. But it's still like one of those, the food is under a heat lamp, you know?
Yeah, the food is prepackaged somewhere else. Someone takes it out of the package, puts it in a microwave, and then puts it under a heat lamp.
They have like pizza, which, you know, like it doesn't look very good, but it is very cheap. Like I think I went to a 7-Eleven the other day and it was like two slices and a drink for like $3. It's like.
Remember that scene in Cobra Kai where the guy, like, in the first episode where he goes to get a pizza from 7-Eleven and then he gives the proprietor some shit and then he goes outside and the boys start hassling him for being poor and getting his pizza from the gas station. So he has no choice but to use karate to kick all their asses.
That's a very realistic scene. if you see a guy who's eating gas station food for, like, his dinner and looks, you know, almost on the verge of homeless, like, probably don't give that guy shit.
Yeah, if nothing else, that guy, he probably doesn't have that much to lose, and he might have a knife.
He might have a knife, like, and he's and like Johnny Lawrence in that movie or in that TV show looks constantly drunk, and he kind of is. So like, that's also another reason probably not to give him shit.
Yeah, Anyways, I guess maybe what we're learning is that New Mexico is just kind of a harder place than California, so we don't take as many risks because we know how bad things can go. But those softies in the valley, they're like, nah, no one would ever just beat the shit out of me for no reason. Right. The only reason they'd beat the shit out of me is evil karate, and I don't think that guy's doing evil karate.
It's like, oh, I was foiled, he is.
Oh, shit. It turns out he's the primary practitioner of evil karate.
He's like the star evil karate guy.
I wish I'd recognized him. For some reason, the people who win those tournaments are usually very famous here. Anyways, so the next day, he goes... He's like coaching some people, and the police come and they like arrest him, and he just confesses to the crimes he committed, which is a bold tactic. But for some reason, the detective's like, you know, your daughter got raped and murdered 5 years ago, so I'm going to give you a pass for admitting to assaulting this guy.
Well, I think he also kind of has a soft spot because he told him that the guy was like hitting his daughter.
Yeah, that's true, but you're still not really allowed to do felonies.
Oh, yeah.
You do them to people who people don't like.
A real cop would definitely just arrest you.
Yeah, especially when you admit to it. Yeah. You know?
It's like, you really shouldn't have done that, but now I have to arrest you.
Yeah, I mean, once you're in interrogation, you're getting arrested no matter, I mean, you've already been arrested, but you're going to get sent to jail and tried no matter what. But anyways, yeah, but for some reason, the cop's like, I'm going to release you on your own recognizance. But meanwhile, the girl has called her dad and is trying to get him to drop the charges. And her dad's like, why would I do that? And the girl's like, well, if you don't, I'm going to tell my mom you're cheating on her with someone named, I think, Lucy. And her dad, like, does the tugging his collar, thing. And
no respect. Says, no respect at all.
Yeah. And then he's like, you know what? I'll tell her. I don't give a shit. Tell you what, I'm going to pick you up after school and we'll go tell her together. Which, yeah. The girl, for some reason, accepts that this is a thing that's going to happen.
And meanwhile, he's getting a call from, or he was just talking to another guy, I guess like an old prison buddy.
Yeah, named Sergio.
Yeah, and the guy like keeps being like, hey, did you think about that thing I told you about? Yeah. It's like a free... I don't know. I don't remember how much it was, like $50,000?
No, it's $10,000. $10,000 to commit an ultra felony that you are going to get caught for.
Yeah. Like there's, it would be obvious who did it. Because, yeah. Like,
it's the shitty boyfriend. And then he called the guy on his cell phone so they could trace the number to Sergio.
Yeah. It's like they did no work to try and make this work. Like, you know, if they were smart, they would have, like, had Sergio do it so that they. And, like, you know, have a little bit of disconnect.
The guy picks her up from school in his SUV, which famously schools, they have, like, cameras all over there to, like, detect when people do this kind of thing. So they can account for where the children have gone.
And he seemed to do it in the middle of the school day. So it's like they had to sign her out or whatever.
Yeah, so that people will just notice that this has happened instantly.
It's basically the dumbest way possible to do it.
Except if he'd got it and signed her out and under reason for sign out, he'd put going to human traffic.
But then he seems surprised when Dermot Mulroney immediately goes to his house and is like, what happened? Where did you take her?
And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then Dermot Mulroney, I guess, like, he's like, okay, I'm going to try subterfuge. So he starts claiming, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I really don't want to go to jail. I'll pay your hospital bills. Why don't I give you money, you know, all this, blah, blah, blah. And the guy, for some reason, buys this, despite the fact that I think Dermot Mulroney was being aggro like 5 seconds ago.
Yeah.
But anyways.
And, yeah, he's like, oh, okay, sounds good. Come in, you can sign this check.
Yeah, he haggles to try to get more money, which is weird. And Dermot Mulroney, for some reason, I guess maybe to be more realistic, isn't just like instantly offering him enormous sums of money to get in the house. And City's like, I got $5,000. I don't have much money. Haggle, haggle, haggle. And eventually I think they decide he's going to write him a check for $5,000, but he needs a pen. So he goes inside and then instantly breaks the man's other arm and starts breaking his fingers until the man tells him where his daughter went or his stepdaughter got taken.
Which is like, you know, he would have eventually been brought in by the police anyways and get that information out. Dermot Mulroney, to be fair, he does need to get like a little, he's trying to be a little hasty about it because the faster he gets her back, the more likely, less likely she is to get trafficked or whatever. But like, this guy is just what, he just hung out at the house waiting for the cops to come get him.
And also, I think that this guy, he doesn't seem like he's going to hold up well under police interrogation, because he's an idiot who shrieks a lot, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't take Drummond Moroney much pressure to get the information from him. I mean, he does pretty horrible torture, but...
I mean, he just does more arm stuff, because that's all... I think I didn't count, but I believe by the end of the scene, he's somehow broken the guy's arm like 4 different times.
Ugh, yeah, pretty brutal. Yeah.
Although at a certain point it becomes funny to me, because it's just like, I mean,
yeah.
Do you have anything else? I mean, yeah, obviously that would be horrible in real life, but it's a weird escalation to, okay, breaking his arm didn't work. What will I do? Break his arm, you know?
It's the one weapon in his arsenal, Lawrence.
Yeah. As I joked, almost all of his successes in this movie are from him breaking people's arms.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
And when you have zip ties and the ability to break arms.
Everything looks like a guy who needs their arms broken.
Or to be zip tied.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then he goes to a security buddy and buys a ton of zip ties and apparently nothing else.
So they specifically point this out earlier in the movie. And then he looks in the trunk. There's really not that much in there. I don't think it shows exactly what he bought, right? It just kind of shows him buying something. But then, like, we were trying to figure out later in the movie, what did he even buy? The only thing that he seemed to use was zip ties, right? Was there anything else?
No, unless the guy sold him... No, it's the only thing he uses is zip ties and the ability to break arms.
Because he gets a gun, but I'm pretty sure that's from a guy that he beats up.
Yeah, he gets that from Sergio.
Yeah, so it's like... Okay, so what did you buy there? Why did that need to be in the movie?
Again, 100%. It started with that guy's going to sell him guns, and then they didn't have the budget for guns. So
they just opened it up to an empty trunk.
With some zip ties. Yeah.
It's like, you know what? I actually don't need anything from in here. Why are the zip ties $5 each?
Look, man, you're not paying tax, okay? And it's faster than Amazon.
This is really what you stand out here all night trying to sell? Like, I feel like you could do something a little bit more enterprising, pal.
Well, hey, for $100, I'll punch you in the face.
So do you think at some point that he did open it up for guns, but then they had to, like, edit it so that it opened up to... Because now I don't remember. They might not actually show them when they show the trunk. In the trunk?
It's a cutaway shot of the trunk opening.
So, like, they probably edited that in later. Like, there might have been a film or a take where it actually did have the guns in there, which is very funny.
Yeah. Again, not cutting this entirely is sort of baffling, because it kind of seems like you can get zip ties. You were bragging about how you know how to get zip ties a lot of different places. I don't, but I will trust you that they're available, you know?
I'm pretty sure you go to Target, you go to anywhere. You're going
to
find
the sex
store,
you go to the murder store.
Zip ties are very useful outside of binding people's hands. The only reason that that's like a thing is because everyone has zip ties. Like, in my little car kit in the back of my trunk, like, it has just a bunch of zip ties in there because they're just useful.
Now I'm remembering that scene where Dennis Reynolds says he has to go to his car to get his tools, and I'm stroking my
tools,
wondering what Ronald gets up to.
My tools!
I like to bind, I like to be bound, okay? That is shit!
Okay, that's only like a step better than than murder.
Yeah, anyways, so he takes the... There's a funny scene, an actually legitimately funny to me scene, where he and the stepdad are in a car, and he, like, the stepdad's like, I think I'm gonna faint because you have broken my arms in so many places. One of his arms is in a normal cast, and then the other one is in this very stupid one that Dermot Mulroney has improvised out of, like, a broom and some duct tape. And he's like, hey, I think I'm gonna pass out. And Dermot Mulroney's like, well, I got some old pills in here from something or other. And the guy's like, okay, can I have some of those? And Dermot Mulroney's like, well, if you're gonna be a pussy, and you think he's not gonna give it to him, but then he does. And then they talk for a while about how many pills the guy should take because they're expired, and does that make them weak or does that make them stronger? And the guy actually sells this shit to me.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That is a good scene.
But it doesn't belong in this movie, but it's very it's pretty funny. Yeah,
it kind of is like, why are you having like a fun little jaunt
weird character bit between the abusive stepdad and the coach who is the avenging angel?
Who basically gave him almost fatal wounds.
Yeah, and then he helps him wash it down with some Jack Daniels. Because
he doesn't have any water.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, and then they go to Sergio's house, and he beats the shit, he steals Sergio's guns and beats the shit out of him and finds this kind of pretty disquieting to look at little hidden room that's just like got a mattress and a dog cage with some handcuffs, and it's like, yeah. I don't like this.
This scene goes on a little too long of him beating up Sergio, because while Sergio is a terrible piece of shit because he's a human trafficker and he's just part of that, we don't, you know, the other guy is in the movie, so like we know what he's done and we've seen him, and it, like, you know, he gets some comeuppance, where Sergio is just like, I don't even know who the fuck this guy is. We don't really need to focus on it. Like, you beat him up, that's all we need.
Yeah,
like, he tortures him for a while. Like, it's not like I felt bad for him or anything. It was just like, do we need to linger here?
Yeah, it seems like he breaks Sergio's arm a couple of times too, I think, and it kind of seems like one arm break would have been enough.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, we get the idea. You're getting the information. And then, yeah, and then he finds out that they sent her to Vegas, right?
Yeah, so then he drives off to Vegas, and the detectives calls him, and he's like, where are you? He's like, I'm heading to Vegas. And he's like, why? And he's like, well, you've been trafficked her there, so I'm going to go just beat the shit out of all. I'm going to go get her back. The guy's like, please don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that, because, like, you're not a detective.
Yeah, you don't.
You don't have any authority. And also, like, why do you even think you'd be able to pull that off?
Yeah, you're just you're a good wrestler, so I guess if you could somehow wrestle her to freedom, fine, but that doesn't seem likely.
It doesn't apply here.
You have a very particular set of skills, but they're sort of almost orthogonal to the problem at hand.
Like, if they're giving away the human trafficked people based on the results of a wrestling tournament, then you're probably going to be good. But
I mean, assuming that they don't let people who are currently wrestlers into the tournament, wrestlers who haven't wrestled for 30 years, yes, you would do quite well, my friend.
Or assuming it's just like average Joe's entering.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to be good, but like, otherwise you're pretty much fucked.
They're probably gonna want like money, which you don't seem like you have all that much of.
He's dressed kind of like a homeless guy.
Yeah, I mean, eventually he does get a nice suit from somewhere. Maybe that's what he bought from the back of the car.
I guess he just charged that. I don't know. He's throughout the movie, he's dressed pretty much like he doesn't give a shit about his appearance at all, and he shows up to this hotel where he found out that the human trafficking auction is going to take place, and he starts hassling the person who does check-ins at the hotel about where the human trafficking auction is. And she's like, I don't know anything about that because I do check-ins at the hotel.
Yeah. He's like, I would like to participate in some human trafficking. Where would I go to traffic?
And she's like, what? Because, like, okay, even if this hotel is seedy and does human trafficking auctions in secret, they probably don't tell every lowly employee, like, the details.
Yeah,
she said
she's only been there for 3 months. You got to be there at least a year before they let you in on the ultra felonies, you know?
Yeah. Like, anyone that gets hired at the hotel is, like, in on the biggest fucking dark secrets of the whole city. Like, it just seems... like, what was he thinking there? But somehow it got him to talk to the owner.
Who's and Jeff the owner. Fakey in kind of an incredible combination of long kind of mullet, I guess you call it. I guess it's not a mullet. It's just really long hair combed back and a really excellent beard and mustache combination.
And yeah, it's kind of like a lion. He looks kind of like a lion.
Yeah, and Jeff Fahey's like, hey, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're some random stranger. Even if I were doing ultra felonies, I wouldn't talk to you about it. But Dermot Mulroney has the brilliant idea of saying, well, I was looking to spend some money, and I was hoping to save some money by buying in bulk. Wink. And then he walks out. And also, at this point, two things happen. First, we cut to the ineffectual cop, and he's like, okay, I've got to go to Vegas. to, I guess, manage the situation. And for some reason, the mother wants to, I mean, not for some reason, it's obvious, but the mother of the trapped girl wants to come. And for some reason, he protests a little bit and says, "I'm sorry, this could be dangerous." Like that, not like, "I'm sorry, this could be dangerous," but all one sentence. "I'm sorry, this could be dangerous." And, but she just sort of says, "No, I'm going to come" three times. And he's like, "Okay, fine, you could come, even though I clearly shouldn't let you. I probably shouldn't even be going. I should just, like, call them and tell them what's
up." Yeah, call the LVPD. But for some reason, he's LAPD, but he crosses state lines here, which is like, I don't think you'd have any jurisdiction. And nope. Like, you don't know anything about it, really. Besides that, you know, a guy is going to some hotel to beat the shit out of the people there.
Yeah. But,
like, yeah.
And that guy says that there's human trafficking. You have some evidence of human trafficking, I guess, but although I guess at this point Sergio spills his guts, so
yeah, maybe I couldn't really tell if he told the cops or not.
Sergio eventually will help establish his cover identity. So
yeah, I was confused about that part because it was like, why is he helping?
And why does he like know exactly what he's supposed to say? And why are the police helping him set up his cover identity?
Yeah, I
don't. But they don't want him to be doing this.
Right. And like, okay, they help him set. So Dermot Mulroney, I guess, tells Sergio to, or he tells the guy that he's working with Sergio and Sergio sent him. So then the guy calls Sergio and is like, "Hey, do you know this guy?" And the guy's like, "Oh yeah, he's like from Saudi Arabia or something." Right.
Yeah, he somehow already got. Yeah. He says that the guy bought a lot of girls in Dubai, but now he's looking for some white chicks. And for some reason, he and Dermot Mulroney, despite apparently never talking, have already somehow spin a simpatico backstory between the two of them. So they never contradict each other, even though, you know, they seems like they would, to the point where somehow they convince Jeff Fahey that, yeah, he's on the level. And then Jeff Fahey kind of out of the blue says, "Hey, you know X," where X is the name of the boy who raped and murdered Dermot Mulroney's daughter. "He used to work for me too. And I bet you know him. And I used to employ him, but then I had to send him to prison because he roughed up the girls." And Dermot Mulroney then calls the cop and says, "Hey, I'm going to go on a killing spree because this guy killed my daughter." And the cop's like, "Please don't." And Dermot Mulroney's like, "No, I'm gonna."
And the guy's like, "Well, but then also they help him establish this cover story," and he talks to Jeff Fahey, right? But the cop's like, "Okay, well, we'll take it from here." And Dermot Mulroney at this point is like, "How would you take it from here? He's already met me and knows who I am."
Yeah, they say that they're going to pull him out and have a police officer double for it, but it's like, do you have his fucking twin? Because otherwise it's not going to fucking work. The time for this was to intercept him before he went to Las Vegas, not now. You're committed to this stupid fucking plan unless you want to just raid the hotel, which you 100% should do.
Yeah, right. It makes no fucking sense.
The cops have somehow come up with a worse plan than "I'm going to go there as a wrestling coach and kind of just see what happens."
He's like, "Well, I guess, you know, the cats loose the canary cage."
Let's just see how this plays out.
That's how the best police work happens.
Yeah. And anyways, we also get a number of absolutely terrible scenes between the mother and the police officer where they're like talking about like their life philosophies or whatever the fuck in the car while driving to Las Vegas. And they're basically unwatchable. Worst things in the movie.
It's like the two worst actors paired up. And it's like, why do they think that we need to see this? Like, why, these characters aren't really even sympathetic either.
It's they're sympathetic because they had a bad thing happen to them, but they're not charismatic, at least. Well,
the cop didn't really have a bad thing happen to them. And the mom kind of had a bad thing happen to her, but she also, like, was almost complicit in it a little bit. I mean, she was abused.
Definitely. She feels guilty, I guess, about it, which is supposed to be our hook. And she's trying to make it right by.
Right. Going. Yeah, that's fine. And with a better actor, it would work. But very tough to pull this off, I think.
Yeah.
And like, not with the worst actor in the movie, especially.
Yeah. And pinging off the second worst actor in the movie. But, you know, she goes like, "Well, I think it's weird that an old man is so obsessed with a young girl." And then the detective replies, "Well, his daughter was killed. And I think that he's trying to stop the same thing happening
from happening to your daughter as a way of sort of overcoming the trauma of letting it happen to his. Just really fucking making the subtext text. It's like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it's like, this was very obvious and you didn't need to say it out loud, but for some reason they were like, let's put in a scene in just in case they didn't get it.
Yeah, and then later on she says, why do I keep... Sorry, I'm not going to try the accent. She has one, but... You've heard my Dracula. We all know that that's where it would end up. But anyways, she's like, why do I keep doing this? And he goes, why do you keep doing what? And she goes, why do I keep trying to find a father figure for Katya? Again, just no subtext. None. That whole Garth Marenghi, I've known writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
They're all cowards, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, but anyways, and also Sergio was trying to, at one point was on the phone with Jeff Fahey and he was trying to explain like, why he was like tied up, and his explanation was, well, I was training for a 10 miler and a dog ran out in front of me. I feel pretty bad, but I think in a couple of months I could try again. It's like, what is, like, legitimately on a word to word, what is he saying happened? Like,
I think, yeah, because like for some reason he's trying to convince the guy that he was going for a 10 mile run.
But then I guess he tripped on a dog?
And it's like, the guy doesn't even know you're in the hospital. You don't need to explain that part.
That's such a weird explanation.
It's a really weird lie. But it kind of works with his character because, like, for some reason, he keeps making up weird lies whenever he talks to people about him getting beat up.
But also, why a 10-mile run particularly? That's not a distance people use.
That one was actually one of the funniest lines in the movie for me, because it's like, it's, you don't need to lie here. Like, it doesn't need to be said.
And then he doesn't say like, okay, and I broke my ankle or something. He just says, I feel pretty bad.
Yeah.
He also says
that I'll still be able to run the 10 miler
in a few months.
Like, even if he didn't have the broken arms, he wouldn't be able to do that. It's just a really good, very funny moment for no. I don't know that it was supposed to be funny, but
he's really lucky that Jeff Fahey gets arrested, because otherwise, what would happen is in a couple of like months, Jeff Fahey would be like, "Well, I'm coming down. Let's go for a 10-mile run together," and he'd be like, "Oh shit!
Wait, give me 3 days to train. How long does it take?"
Well, I mean, honestly, that kind of depends on what you were running at before you set out to train a 10-miler.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is a good part.
Yeah. That reminds me of the running subreddit where everyone's just like, hey, could I run a, sub-4? They'll post like a screenshot of one run they did. And then they'll be like, hey, could I run a sub-4 half marathon? Is that possible? And there's like hundreds of these posts a day. And the answer to everyone is just like, I mean, it kind of depends on how fast you want to run it and if this run is typical. And just basically, this question is not answerable given the information you have provided.
You give so little information, you expect us to just be like, sure.
I mean, anything's possible with God.
So jot that down.
Yeah, put that down in your little book. But anyways, so... then, with his identity confirmed, they upgrade Dermot Mulroney to go to the sex predator floor, which is an incredibly dank and unpleasant-looking hotel room where every single square foot of wall is covered with weird Baroque paintings and horrible wallpaper, and there are no windows. So it looks kind of like the inside of a Holiday Inn Express that someone was given $100 to go to the thrift store and buy all the paintings and just hang them on the wall.
Yeah, there's like no lights anywhere, so it's like super dark everywhere.
Well, there's these weird lights where they've got like, it's a fluorescent thing, and then they've got a red dot on either side. And he also says that there are no security cameras in the elevator to this floor or anywhere on the floor, which really raises the question of like, how does this hotel work where they've got a whole floor for the once a month human trafficking auction?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, is it even once a month? Like,
yeah, no, they say, remember when the guy loses the auction, he's like, well, you can try again in 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is a weird specific detail. But yeah, and it's like, also, like, how would you have any kind of security?
Yeah. And
I wouldn't believe him if he said he didn't have cameras, because I'd be like, well, you're definitely keeping videos of this stuff so that you have...
There's a 50% chance that most of this thing's money is made by blackmail, you know?
Right, exactly. And like at the very least, you keep that kind of security on somebody so that if they try to do anything, you have like something on them.
Yeah, definitely. But anyways, so then let's see. Then we get to the human auction sequence, which is kind of incredible. So first
for a very weird reason.
Yeah, the auction is done entirely through a menu on the hotel TV, on the TV in these horrible hotel rooms. It has a custom icon, which is a gavel and a gavel stand. And on the gavel stand is a cutout of a woman, like you would see on the entrance to a woman's bathroom. And then when he logs in, it first helpfully tells him, hey, you're leaving the hotel's secure network. Are you sure you want to proceed? Which, very weird to have that as a warning on your app. But I guess that exists to stop people, other people in the hotel who aren't supposed to be in the auction. Yeah. The human auction.
What is this woman auction thing?
And it's like, never mind.
I don't want to leave the secure network.
Yeah. And then he has to pick a fucking username, but they say with at least one number. And so he picks like headlock 66 or something like that. It's headlock and then some random numbers. And I paused the... and then he has to select the age range he's interested in bidding on. And the options are 10 to 13... 16 to 17 and 18 plus. So I guess if you're between 13 and 15, or sorry, 14 and 15, you don't have to worry about getting human trafficked.
Well, that's one, it's just like, it's not an interest range for their general clientele.
Yeah, you got 10 to 13 for the super pedophiles, 16 to 17 for the pedo curious, and 18 plus for people who are just monsters, but not that kind.
Just enslavers. And like, oh yeah, there's also a really funny line where the guy is like talking about, or is like considering bringing in a Dermot Mulroney, because he's like, well, I don't know this guy really, but he's supposed to be some middleman from that buys a bunch of people in Saudi Arabia or whatever. And he's like, you know what? We need to get more into to selling to people who just like use people as slaves instead of as brides. Like, that's where the real money is. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Also, I don't think that is where the real money is. I mean, I'm not going to claim to be an expert, but I think the money is like mostly in sex slavery, because that's sort of a specialty product as opposed to just anyone.
It's like, Jesus Christ, people. Did we need to like dig into the depths and like let's ponder the economy of human trafficking a little bit.
But anyways.
I doubt it's accurate, but like, what are we doing here, folks?
Yeah, I think it's probably accurate on some level, but also I don't really want to like break it down because this is a comedy show. Yeah. And that's an incredibly depressing topic.
Yeah. It's pretty fucked up.
But anyways, and of course, then we get to the usernames, and I took a screenshot of one. Can you pull it up? But the one that really stood out to me was someone named fucking Shrek 99.
Yeah. Let's see here. All right, we got headlock 66, which is it. We got VTAG or VTAG Easton,
which is that literally just existed that he later on he can figure out what kind of car that guy drives.
Yeah. Then you have Flying Solo 3344. Yeah. You got Shrek 99.
Again, Shrek. No. What would Donkey think?
You got Tiger 4545. You got 300 sourdough, and I like the idea that like there's some guy who just got really into sourdough baking over COVID, but also goes to human trafficking. A man isn't a monolith, Lawrence.
Yeah, he has more than one interest.
And then you have Union Phobia 222, which is a very funny one to me because it's like, somebody wants to take the high ground on unions, and he's like, actually, they're bad for the economy or whatever, but they also do human trafficking.
Yeah. But anyways, so he finds Katja in the 16 to 17 range, and then a cool rock song plays so we can have an exciting bidding montage where a Greek guy is really pushing him hard, and it's like, he's never going to pay for this, so I don't know why he can't just keep bidding over and over and over, but for some reason he's obsessed with, I don't want the bidding to go too high. So he arranges to have the Greek guy...
He doesn't have any money, to be clear. He doesn't have literally any money.
Yeah, his plan is essentially just get enough information so that he can go find some arms to break, then break the arms.
Yeah.
And when that's the case, you can kind of just bid whatever you want, but he doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, and so he like uses the tag of the guy that's overbidding him, right?
Uh-huh.
And is like, oh, hey, I think this is like a car, which I can't remember exactly... Why was VTEC Easton?
It was a vintage Aston Martin. Well,
that's right. Vintage Aston, which I don't even know how he really figured that out, because it's VTAG Aston, all one word.
Yeah, but then it turns out it's not an Aston Martin, a vintage Aston Martin. It's a Aston Martin Vantage.
Yeah. But like the cops figure it out and then they like tow it or something.
Yeah, and that's the cops' like one contribution to this whole thing is just figuring that out. But anyways, and then he still loses the auction. So he's like, fuck it. We all knew it was going to come down to this. So he just goes and beats the shit out of Jeff Fahey. And Jeff Fahey says, I'm sorry you lost your first auction, but what you're doing is highly inappropriate. As
he's like, God, these guys, these like human traffickers from other countries don't fuck around.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, I could see if you're into buying and selling humans, I could see you also doing something like that. But I mean,
that's the kind of people you fuck with, and pretty scary, probably.
Yeah. But anyway, and he has the genius idea. The guy who raped and murdered his daughter was named Johnny. So he just starts telling everyone that Johnny sent him. He says, Johnny sold you out to my boss, who sold you out to the feds. And I don't know what the fuck that means, I guess. And then the feds are like, well, why don't you send one of your guys to bring him in, is the implication, maybe. But that's not how, whatever.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah, I don't know. And like, doesn't he like beats a lot of them up and kills some of them?
So yeah.
It's kind of like, well, they're not going to get revenge anyways. So I guess one guy does live. Jeff Fahey does.
Yeah, and he's apparently, this was enough to convince him that Johnny actually did betray him, so he will later kill Johnny, and that's how Dermot Mulroney gets his revenge, by framing the guy. And then, but anyways, so we move on. Eventually he beats out of Jeff Fahey where the girls are, and then he shows up and just starts telling, he shows up and for some reason the guy's cooking, the guy who answers the door was baking cookies, because this human like warehouse has like a nice kitchen. In a way that I didn't really understand. But he's making cookies, and the other guy was watching a fight, and Dermot Mulroney just blusters his way in until they take him to the kit where the girls are. But then, unfortunately, Katja decides that Dermot Mulroney was behind all of this and, like, you know, reacts to his presence, and the guard realizes that, you know, she knows Dermot Mulroney, and so yeah. Dermot Mulroney is a plant, and they get into it. There's a lot of not very interesting fist fights that I skipped through because I was coming up on time this time.
Yeah, he fights a big guy who's much bigger than him and beats him.
Yeah.
It's the only fight in the movie that like kind of pushes him.
Yeah, and as the big guy is walking him back to the room, he says, this better be legit, man. And you know what? I can't believe Dermot Mulroney betrayed that guy.
What if he was like, actually, sorry, it wasn't legit. I tried.
Yeah. No, but I'm going to let that girl get human trafficked because my honor is more important.
Yeah. I can't lie.
Yeah, and then it turns out the Jeff A, he's second in command, who's this really weird looking, he looks like a fish man kind of, shows up, and it turns out that he murdered Dermot Mulroney's daughter, so Dermot Mulroney is beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, but for some reason he reveals that to him in the middle of like a confrontation. He's like, actually, that guy didn't do it. He just took the fall for me for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, he did rape her, but he didn't kill her, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, and
still
then.
Pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. So anyways, and he gets the upper hand of Dermot Mulroney, and he's about to, oh, and for some reason, Dermot Mulroney, he shot Dermot Mulroney's daughter because he killed her because she was making a fuss. And Dermot Mulroney, for some reason, is incensed by this and spends like 30-second monologue trying to explain to the guy why it was actually very reasonable for his daughter to be upset. It's like,
dude, I don't know if that really applies at this point.
Yeah.
This guy.
He's like, no, seriously, she woke up in a strange place after having a sex crime done to her. It makes sense.
The guy's like, I don't know what you want me to say.
But anyway, so the guy's about to shoot Jeff Fahey, but then a gunshot rings out and it's the detective. And I guess he didn't kill the guy, though, because then Dermot Mulroney picks up a gun and he's about to shoot the guy again. But the detective's like, don't do it. And he's like, okay, puts the gun down. It's like, but it sort of seemed like the guy was dead already. Oh, I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So anyways, and then everyone's like, hey, great work, I guess. The woman detective from Las Vegas says, thanks to this, we found several girls. Good work. Very ballsy. I love the description of several girls.
Yeah. And yeah. It's like, really? You're going to tell him good work when he basically committed a ton of crime?
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe you don't send it to prison, but you should not be encouraging this behavior.
Yeah, right.
So anyways, and then we cut several months ahead where Katya has gotten good at wrestling, and the detective meets Dermot Mulroney outside, and he's like, hey, that guy who raped your daughter got murdered in prison because apparently Jeff Fahey believed you're very, very, very primitive, and it seems like it fell apart instantly, would have fallen apart instantly, frame job of just telling him that he betrayed him. So he had him killed. And this is the line that I think I told you about that sold you on the movie. Dermot Mulroney goes, good. That guy's been living rent-free in my head for far too long.
I don't think that, like, this is gonna...
That's not...
This is gonna solve the problem.
But also just such a weird, like, for a grizzled 60-year-old man who's been on a killing spree to talk about living rent-free in someone's head.
I think Dan described it that as an epic clapback, which it's so good, the idea that, like, he needs to get an epic clap back on the guy for, like, doing sex crimes and murder on his freaking daughter.
Yeah. So anyways, and then the detective asks him for help on a case, and it's like, unless you need someone's arms broken, I don't think he's your man, dude.
He didn't do a lot of investigation.
He didn't do any. The only clues he got was torturing people.
Yeah. Which, like, doesn't work.
Yeah, and also okay, if he's out there as a vigilante doing that shit and giving you clues, okay, you'll solve crimes.
Yeah, obviously you gotta use it, but...
Yeah, you should. It's like, obviously you shouldn't do that, it's bad, but that is a way you could solve crimes. Bringing him in to consult is not, like, how you get results from a guy whose main, like, specialty is torture.
Yeah. And wrestling.
Yeah. And epic clapbacks.
Epic clapbacks. On sex criminals.
But only ones who, like, committed sex crimes against his fucking family. He can't do unrelated ones.
Well, he did some okay clapbacks on the Katya's dad, stepdad.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This movie is so ridiculous, man. That was a pretty fun one, honestly.
Yeah. So anyways, what's your favorite thing the stepfather said?
I think I like the way he said, how about some wings?
I can't open this shit. But also, at one point, the doorbell rings and he just goes, fucking door!
Oh, yeah. It's like, why would that upset you so much? Oh, man, that guy's so good. I would watch a whole movie just about him. Maybe not doing sex crimes, but...
Yeah, just him trying to... I'd watch a movie of him trying to, like, navigate the, like, rehabilitation process of, like, trying to figure out how to use his arms again after they've been broken 6 to 12 times.
Just, like, imagine him, like, applying for a job. Oh, man.
And also, at one point, he's like stuck in bed, and he's like, I want immunity! And the police officer's just like, we'll see what we can do, which of course means no.
Yeah. Why would they give that to him?
And then he's like, I'm thirsty. I want some ice. And a nurse brings it to him, and he's like, fucking finally. It's like, even when he's in traction and going to jail forever, he's still a weird asshole.
He's still such a piece of shit. He's learned no lesson in this movie.
At all. Which I guess kind of proves that arm breaking doesn't work, because
it did not fix him. Yeah. We never saw the popcorn guy again, but I think we can assume that he still was committing sex crimes out there.
Well, I mean, he's probably, obviously sex crimes aren't about sex, they're about power. But on the other hand, he's going to have to go 6 months without jerking off. There's going to be a lot of, energy pent up there, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's going to some dark places, I bet.
Oh, no. Maybe his friends will help him out.
Yeah, that's what Dermot Mulroney was hoping would happen. But
yeah. It's like, what? This sounds kind of like a fantasy for you, Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah. Honestly, I've seen some pornos with that premise, basically.
Where a guy breaks his arms and his friends have to...
Well, it was mostly the stepmother, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But a guy's attraction, he gets horned up.
Phew!
Yeah. Oh, I thought this was going gay, but no, it's just incest. Hell yeah.
No, that's a perverted I can get by.
Anyways, do you have any parting shots on this piece of shit movie that we love?
I don't, but I had a very good time watching it. I had a very good time talking about it with you too.
Yeah, I think we kind of needed this one, honestly, after the dog shit that was Leprechaun Origins.
It was so bad, not even fun to talk about.
I mean, it was, but mostly because it was just Ronnie slinging some slurs, you know?
Yeah, it was Ronnie, talking about the Irish and also talking about other movies.
Yeah.
We didn't really spend that much time on Leprechaun.
Yeah, for a movie about a killer leprechaun, that had surprisingly little of interest in it. Anyways, yeah. So I don't think it's late. Let's not do a game, but do you have a recommendation or caution?
I do, yeah, okay. Okay. Sorry, getting rid of the giggles here. All right, I got two recommendations this week. No cautions. So I watched a few movies this week. Two that I quite liked, actually. So the first one I watched was Spy Kids from 2001, directed by Robert Rodriguez. Now, I never watched this movie when it came out, even though I was probably about the right age for it. So I don't know why I never saw it. But this movie was surprisingly really good. I really liked it. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be that surprised because Robert Rodriguez knows how to direct, but it's a really weird, goofy kids movie. And I think I described it to Lawrence as it's like a mid-level budget movie production, but it has the sound editing of the Nickelodeon game shows where it'll have slime noises and bubblegum will go blah, and stuff like that. And it's why is it doing that? And I think it's just because it was funny. It just kind of works.
You know what's insane about that movie?
What's that?
That's the closest I think Antonio Banderas ever came to playing James Bond or a James Bond figure. And that's nuts because of everything about him.
Yeah. That is weird to think about.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of perfect for the role.
Yeah, it is. Him and Carla Gugino make an excellent couple. They've got insane chemistry. And I kind of wish, I know this can't happen, but I wish there was a slightly more serious spy movie about just the parents from the Spy Kids series.
We totally watched that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another weird fact about this movie is that Danny Trejo plays the character Machete in this movie, which is, I guess, the same character. From the preview before Death Road? No.
Death Proof. And then film Machete, Machete and Machete Kills. So the same character from Spy Kids also went on to have a threesome with Lindsay Lohan and her mother.
Yeah, really, really strange stuff that he decided to bring the character over. I don't know why he did that. I also saw that Alexa Penavega, the main actress, the child actress from this, was also in the Machete movie as a different character, though.
Yeah, she's just one of Robert Rodriguez's sort of stable now of actors he likes to work with.
Gotcha. I never saw Machete. Did you?
I did. It is not as fun as it should be, but if you go in with kind of low expectations, it's okay. It's one of those movies that's trying so hard to be transgressive and outrageous, but it can't quite, because it's trying instead of just being.
That was like why I was never super interested in it, because it's like one of those where they wink at the audience while they're doing it.
Weirdly, of the movies that got spun off from those Death Proof trailers, Hobo with the Shotgun is the superior product. But
oh, I have heard that one's good. Maybe I should watch that.
Yeah, that is that movie. It's in on the joke, but it's also understands exactly how the movies it's parodying worked, and it executes it. It's like one of those movies that like have to understand before you parody. It understands that. And Machete kind of doesn't exactly. So I'll give you an example. There's a scene in Hobo with a Shotgun where a woman like gets her hand put in a lawnmower. And then so she ends up with like a single like finger left that's been skeletonized. And then she stabs someone to death with it.
And then
there's a scene in Machete where he like rips a dude's guts out and uses it to bungee jump to get away from an explosion. And the lawnmower one works because it is genuinely like really unpleasant and hard to watch. And that like makes it funny, kind of like there's a tension that's getting released by the joke, but the Machete one, it's not really going for it with the unpleasantness and the gore. So it ends up just not having any tension that can be released by the outrageousness. So it doesn't like work as a joke.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right. Where it's like they don't quite fully go all in on it, so it can't really.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. But Spy Kids, weird movie to spin off into the Machete movie.
Also,
but,
watch Spy Kids 2, man.
I'm going to. You know, I started it. I haven't finished it yet.
It's even. I remember it being even better.
And I feel like I've heard good things about Spy Kids 3D as well.
I can't speak to that one. I have a vague sense that that's a bad movie, but I know that Spy Kids 2 is incredible. For some reason, it's got an extended Ray Harryhausen reference in it. And also at Steve Buscemi, who is playing the sort of like charming inventor in a kids movie, says, "Do you think God hides in heaven because he's scared of what he created?"
That's a great line, honestly. I've seen that quoted, and I thought that was hilarious. But Spy Kids. So the premise of this movie is really weird. There's this show that's like a Teletubbies meets Dr. Seuss kind of TV show that kids really like. But it turns out that the host of the show is actually like some international supervillain who's turning spies into these like clown looking freaks. So it's like almost like some body horror kind of deal where this guy named Floop is turning people into these weird clowns. And for some reason that's an international war. I don't really know how, but it's very funny, honestly. It really works, but also has like some weird stuff in it where you're like, huh, there's, you know, they kind of like didn't just write it off as like the whole thing is a joke or a waste of time. Like they have some kind of interesting ideas throughout the movie. So I actually quite liked Spy Kids. I thought it was pretty good. And the two main actors were both, I thought, pretty good, even though they're kids. You know, a lot of times kids can be like kind of terrible. So yeah, Spy Kids from 2001. That was a recommendation. Now the other recommendation that I have is a movie called 8mm from 1999, directed by Joel Schumacher.
It's 8mm, Ronald.
I know it's 8mm, but it's the title is actually 8mm.
Yeah, but everyone calls it 8mm, Ronald. All
right, fine. It's 8mm, obviously, because of the film. But if you look for it on friggin', if you search for it, you need to type 8mm.
Yeah, well, okay, but if you type you have to type 8mm, because if you type in 8mm, it comes up with a picture of Ronald's penis. High five!
Hey! All right. Anyways, directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Nick Cage, Joaquin Phoenix, James Gandolfini. So this is not a fantastic movie, but I actually quite enjoyed it. It's like a really sleazy film noir, and it has Nick Cage kind of doing a serious role. He doesn't really go too off the rails here, which is, I think, a little bit of a weakness for Nick Cage. He's fine as a serious actor, but like where he really excels is when he does like insane shit, and he just doesn't really have the opportunity to do it here. But this movie's shot really well. It looks really good. It's paced fairly well. It was pretty interesting throughout. I think the premise of this movie is kind of like you dance with the devil and it changes you, which is pretty explicit. Like, that's the thesis, and that's pretty explicitly spelled out. I don't really think it delivers on that thesis. The ending is kind of disappointing. This is like Joaquin Phoenix before he was big, James Gandolfini before The Sopranos. So it's kind of interesting to see those guys here. It's like a pretty star-studded cast. Everyone acts really well. But yeah, I don't know that this movie landed very well when it came out. It didn't get good reviews, and I don't know if it made money or not. Probably not. Because I looked at Joel Schumacher's filmography, and this one wasn't really mentioned. Just so I'm guessing that it was not one of his more, maybe not his biggest flop or anything, but this is maybe the first Joel Schumacher movie. Have you seen much of his filmography? This is maybe the first one I've seen.
Not that I mean, you've probably seen his Batman.
I've seen both Batman movies that he did, and I've seen
what else did he make? I know the name, but I've only known him from the Batmans.
Yeah, like I've seen one other thing he did.
Lost Boys, Falling. Oh, he made Falling Down.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen either of those.
I actually, he made Trespass, which I kind of enjoyed. I will kind of defend Falling Down, albeit I have a really Phone Booth. You seen Phone Booth?
Yeah, Phone Booth. That was the other one that I'd seen, the Colin Farrell movie, right?
A Time to Kill.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that one. So I hadn't really seen much of it, and a lot of his movies are kind of comedies, which
Flatliners.
I'm not sure how, you know, so I'm kind of interested to watch some of his earlier stuff, because I think by the time he made 8mm and maybe Phone Booth, and it was like post-Batman, so he was like kind of at the decline of his career. So anyways, pretty interesting movie. I had a good time with it. It's very sleazy. It's about a guy hunting down to see if a snuff film is real. If that gives you kind of an idea of like how kind of fucked up the movie is. It kind of revels in it, in the fucked upness. It does not shy away from it like Ruthless does. So like, if you're okay with that, I think that this movie kind of engages with the premise at least. That being said, it's like pretty, there's like a lot of like pretty crazy shit that happens in the movie. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, and I recommend it if you have the stomach for it. That's it for me.
Okay, I have two things. First off is a caution, which is that I read the next book in the Saint of Steel series by T. Kingfisher. These are those weird, like, romance fantasy novels that I keep reading and complaining about. This one's called Paladin's Faith. The way each of these works is that they star a paladin of a god who's died, so they're not really paladins anymore. They're just kind of berserkers. Who like will occasionally flip out and enter this like killing frenzy where they're very hard to kill. And the way the god worked was essentially like helping them like channel their fury so they didn't kill innocent people when they were raging. Now that the god's dead, they can't really do that. So they're just sort of dangerous and everyone's like not sure what to do with them. And each book centers on one of the surviving paladins of the dead god who then goes on an adventure and falls in love with someone, and they're sort of like romantic comedies. They've got a little bit of like seriousness to them. And the main problem I have with them is that in every single one of them, the main character will be like a paladin who's convinced no one could ever love them. And their love interest will be a girl or a guy who's convinced that no one can ever love them. And they spend a lot of the novel just moping until eventually they realize what we've known from the start, which is that they're going to end up together. But normally the thing that gets you through them is that the adventures they go on are interesting. Especially the second one has this pretty cool plot about like kidnapped nuns who turn out to be werebears and some undead guys and blah, blah, blah. This one, instead, it's just like these people are trying to track down an inventor who made a thing that can get salt out of seawater, which will like destabilize a criminal syndicate that's trying to kill the girl. And the paladin's protecting her while she does this. But so they spend a lot of time just in court, like doing like supposedly interesting intrigues in the court, which is very boring. And it's weird because she actually turned down the self-loathing on the characters. The girl doesn't hate herself at all and thinks that someone could love her. And the paladin doesn't, but you spend a lot less time in his head with him just being like, wah! Over and over. But the plot is boring. So it's like a reversal of the way they're normally bad, but it's still not good. And I probably wouldn't read it. I'm probably going to read the next one in the series because I'm a fucking moron.
I mean, didn't you already caution against at least another one?
Yeah, I think I recommended the first one because the seams hadn't started to show yet. But
the weird thing, this one does actually have a pretty good ending. It just takes forever to get to it. I don't know. My recommendation, though, is Callus and Toll by David Annandale, which is a Warhammer Age of Sigmar novel about Toll, an inquisitor, and Callus, his sort of friend, partner, whatever, who's a mercenary warrior, and they're investigating a very strange murder in a colorful fantasy city. And the thing I loved about this is that it's structured like a CSI book, which is like episode, which is an incredible idea for one of these. So like every chapter after the first like four, where they get, you know, everything set up and they're together and investigating together, is just they go to a place, they speak to a colorful character or enter a colorful setting, they get some clues, there's an action sequence about one in three times, there's a neat little bit of world building or texture or flavor. You get a real sense of like, this is a lived in world because you're seeing these little vignettes. The characters from the vignettes usually don't return, although occasionally they do. And it's just a great way of exploring the world and like finding out more about Age of Sigmar. And it really drove home to me why a lot of fantasy novels are structured as road movie or stories, because then you get to like see the world and all that without having to be committed to building any one place. But I think a CSI style one is great if you want to just sort of give senses of different things happening in a fantasy city. This is all set in the city of Cinderfall. And I've never seen a fantasy novel structured like that. And I thought it was pretty ingenious. He might've like swiped it from somewhere, but if so, I hadn't seen it before. So it seemed new to me and I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I love procedurals. Like a story structured like one, that's like pretty attractive to me.
Yeah, this might actually be worth your time. It turns out it's like the third in the series. There are minor characters in a book called City of Secrets, and then they got their own novel called Callus and Toll, The Silver Shard. It's weird that they got a subtitle on the first one and then didn't have one on the second one. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, that is weird, yeah.
Yeah, normally Games Workshop is sort of, they got their shit on lock and don't make that kind of mistake. But anyways, yeah, I mean, if you're like want a quick fantasy novel and you're okay with licensed content, you could do a lot worse. I loved this. Again, it's not a classic of literature, but I think for what it is, it's very well constructed.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, anyways, and that's it from me. From all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I